I sincerely hope that this is the last time that I find myself here.
You just don't get it, do you, Jean-Luc? The trial never ends. We wanted to see if you had the ability to expand your mind and your horizons. And for one brief moment, you did.
When I realized the paradox.
Exactly. For that one fraction of a second, you were open to options you had never considered. That is the exploration that awaits you. Not mapping stars and studying nebula, but charting the unknown possibilities of existence.
Q, what is it that you're trying to tell me?
You'll find out. In any case, I'll be watching. And if you're very lucky, I'll drop by to say hello from time to time. See you out there.
Welcome, everyone. We are recording, I believe this is episode 18 of the Shuttle Pod. We're excited to have you back. Remember, a couple episodes ago, we did a feature on Generations, sort of a deep dive, and we thought it might be fun to do, you know, as we go on in future episodes, the deep dives on other of the TNG movies, and we thought, well, hey, let's start with what is basically the first of five movies with the TNG cast, which is the season finale, or series finale, of All Good Things. I'm Jared Whitley, and I'm here with my friends.
Hey, I'm Kayla Iacovino.
And this is Brian Drew.
And we are your Trek Movie Shuttle Pod. So, the three of us, after we recorded our last episode, we decided, okay, let's rewatch All Good Things, and then circle the wagons in a week or so, and discuss what our impressions were 22 years after the episode first aired.
Oh, God.
Yeah. 22 years. I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, so.
Wait, is that true?
Yeah, 1994. Yeah.
That was 22 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow, so people that were born after All Good Things aired can legally drink in the United States.
Some of them. Yeah. Not all of them, Kayla. Some of them.
Yeah. Thanks for putting that in perspective like that, Kayla. That made it much better.
Anytime.
Okay, so what were your general... What are some people's general impressions as they rewatched it? And any top-line items you guys want to start with?
I guess I'll jump right in there and start. I absolutely loved rewatching this episode. Always been one of my favorites. I mean, I think it's undisputed to be one of the best Next Generation episodes for good reason. Yep. And I just had such a good time rewatching it because I think one of the things that All Good Things did so well was to capture the spirit of the characters that you grew to know and love over 7 years of the show. And every time I rewatch it, I'm there again, remembering the characters. And it's this great sense of nostalgia in all of the best ways. I think they were able to play on the nostalgia that you had for the past 7 years of the show in a really good way, in a useful way.
And using the science fiction element to feed into that nostalgia in terms of we have stuff happening in the present, we have stuff happening 7 years in the past, and then we have stuff happening 25 years in the future, which, you know, to revisit what we just said, it's only a few years away that it'll be as far away as they predicted the future would be. So it'll be interesting to see how the cast members look in three years compared to how they looked in the show.
Picard is not going to look nearly as old as he looked in the show.
No. Well, they gave Patrick that ridiculous beard, you know.
So yeah, and he's aged much better than Picard did. He has. Patrick Stewart has. Yeah.
Yeah, the time travel format obviously gives you a certain nostalgia kick, and it allows you to see and to remember how far the characters had come in 7 years.
Particularly Data, I think.
And Data, that whole scene with him and O'Brien.
Yeah, beautiful.
When he about burning the midnight oil, and Data takes it literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you attempt to ignite a petroleum product on this ship, and Picard's listening.
And he's laughing along with you.
And he's smiling and laughing because that's who Data was at the time. And it's just like, it's like Picard's like reliving almost a fond memory of who Data once was. It's stuff like that I love in the episode. Like the stuff during the encounter at Farpoint sequence is some of my favorite parts of it.
Oh, such as?
No, it's just like seeing how everybody looked. You know, when you watch a TV show season after season after season, some of the changes, you can miss them because they happen gradually.
Oh, sure.
But when it all got thrown back to the pilot like that, it just reminded you of how different Star Trek The Next Generation was when it ended.
Yeah. And one of the things I love about that is that, you know, I don't think Encounter at Farpoint is particularly beloved or seen as a highlight of the series.
No.
You know,
no, it's finest first, hour.
No, no. And I think the first season is seen as the weakest season, but they took total ownership of it. Mm-hmm. They're like, this is where we started. We're proud of where mm-hmm. we ended. These are the bookends of our series, and you're going to love it, and we do.
And it works.
It does. It
totally works. It totally works. It's one of the best finales of any TV show I've ever watched. And I'm saying that obviously biased as a Star Trek fan.
Sure.
But I've seen a lot of finales for a lot of legendary TV shows, and most of them do not pay off.
Yeah.
It's hard to end any show at all because mm-hmm. no one's going to be happy. You're going to leave some people disappointed, even just at the fact that the show is over, and that's a sad thing. But
yeah.
I think – so in my mind – and again, like you said, I'm also biased as a Star Trek fan, but I think All Good Things is just the best ending to any series ever, because they leave you with a good feeling at the end. It's one of the few series finales that is widely regarded as one of the best episodes, and one of the best ways to wrap up the series. And I think a big part of that is, like you said, it's this time travel aspect, letting us relive nostalgia and saying, you know, where will they be in the future? And they did it perfectly because they have Captain Picard as the person who's taking you through that story. So you're experiencing those things with him. So mm-hmm. it's like Brian said, when he goes back and sees Data again, you're laughing because you remember Data, and he's laughing and smiling along with you. Mm-hmm. And in the future Picard, I think they did well making him almost seem crazy to everyone. Because, you know, as an audience member watching, you have all this extra information that the other characters don't have, except for Picard.
Right.
Yeah. We have the reaction in the different time zones, time periods, excuse me, where the earliest time period, he's an untested commander. They don't know him. They don't know what he's doing. In the middle period, they've been with him for 7 years. They trust everything that he does. You know, when he says jump, they're already up in the air. And then in the third period, he's got some kind of space dementia or Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
And so there's some distrust of him there. Now here's one thing that I have to ask. Does he say to the future group, does he mention anything about it being about Q being involved? Because they don't trust him a little bit, but if he says, no, seriously, you guys, Q is messing with us, then I think that would give him a little credibility. But I don't think he does.
He doesn't. You're right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, that would be the first thing that would come out of my mouth. It's like, dude, Q is messing with the timelines. Please, you got to trust me.
Does he mention it in any of the timelines? He definitely doesn't mention it. He kind of does in the old timeline, but they don't know. He yells, Q, come out.
There's a letter of the alphabet, as far as I know.
Well, no. Yeah, and in the quote-unquote current timeline, they have a whole briefing about it where they talk about whether Q is actually serious or not.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
And that's what Data makes that analogy about Q treating Picard like a beloved pet.
Beloved pet. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Totally.
There's something about that that has bugged me for 20 years is when Q's saying to Picard at the trial, he says, I'll answer any 10 questions that end with a yes or no. And the last question Picard asks, he says, I'll tell you as long as you promise not to tell anyone else. And then it cuts to the briefing room, and he's immediately told everyone on the senior staff. So, that's not to say Picard has no integrity or he lied to Q. I think they just missed it in the script.
Huh.
Does that make sense?
Or Q didn't really expect him to. I think Q was just being playful.
Yeah, it could have been.
You know, it's hard to tell with that rascally fellow.
He is quite rascally.
Yeah.
I do love that scene where he's confronting Picard about the previous adventures of the 7 years, and he says... the three crimes that he lays at his feet are you worrying about Commander Riker's career, indulging Data in his witless exploration of humanity, and listening to Counselor Troy's pedantic psychobabble.
Yes. I love that quote.
Yeah, Yeah, that was good.
Because it's, again, it's one of those things where they're, it's like you said, they own it. They're like, these are the things that, you know, that we've done in this series. And yes, Troy's pedantic psychobabble is one of them. And we're going to own that. We're going to hang a lantern on it.
And absolutely. They also own the technobabble because the finale is loaded with it.
Oh, yeah. It's just
static warp shells and all that.
Yeah, to the point where Geordi foreshadows how much we're going to get by making fun of it when he approaches Picard in his vineyard.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Or some other damn thing.
Yeah.
Phase inducers. Or something. Yeah.
So, yeah, I even have this in my notes because I was noticing the technobabble as well. They needed to modify the deflector dish, of course, to emit an inverse tachyon pulse. Also, just of course. Mm-hmm. But I love how that idea, so that idea originally comes from Data, and it kind of trickles through. Yeah, and it trickles through each of the timelines, right. And you see, Picard, and by that time, the shifts in time are moving so quickly that he can basically relay information between the timelines really quickly.
And yeah, then, to the point. Yeah,
there's that great line where Picard says, "Mr. Data, you are a clever man in any time period."
In any timeline, yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Something I was noticing as I was watching this through, and you talk about the time shifts, is I feel like the episode is edited extremely well, because in the first half, where he doesn't know what's going on, the edits are all very jarring, to the point where it's a little distracting, and it's like, well, of course it's supposed to be distracting. This is how Picard mm-hmm. feels by this unusual effect. Then toward the end, the edits are really smooth to the point where it almost feels like Picard is swimming in time because he's gotten so good at this.
Yeah, it's continuous.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That's a great observation.
Oh, thank you.
No, I mean, like, the transitions are really cool at the beginning. Like you were saying, like, occasionally, like, they'll cut to Picard and he'll have bumped into somebody, and that kind of is what jars him back into,
like he wasn't paying attention.
Right, and it's disorienting to the character and it's disorienting to us. And then, like you said, later on, the cutting gets very crisp. When Picard finally figures everything out. That's a great observation, man.
Very, very smart. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I credit most of my knowledge of cinema techniques to watching those red letter media reviews of the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Times. Anyway, okay. So I want to talk a little bit about guest stars who they brought back for the finale and maybe see if there were any guest stars they didn't bring back that maybe they could have. And the three, I mean, of course, John Delancey's Q, then Denise Crosby is Tasha. Chief O'Brien, of course, came back from Deus Ex 9. And then Andreas Katsoulis returned as Tomalak while he was – and he played that Romulan commander three or four times already on TNG. But at the time, he was on Babylon 5. So were these good choices for characters to bring back? What did they add? Were there other characters who might have been missing? Well, recognizing, of course, you thought Wesley was missing.
Yeah, from the past. I mean, Wesley. Well, I guess you didn't have to show Wesley.
Yeah, in the first season of the show, in Encounter at Farpoint, Wesley was sort of inconsequential. He was just some kid, and I think he was on Farpoint Station, wasn't he?
Yeah,
yeah. At that point, yeah, but yeah, you're right.
He and Beverly go shopping
because you don't see Beverly in the past either.
Yeah, because they're at Farpoint.
Right, yeah. With Riker.
Riker. And we do see Riker in the past, and it's a clip from the episode Arsenal of Freedom.
Yep.
Which they I guess because he didn't want to shave off the beard or whatever, or they felt like.
Well, he also looked a lot different. Yeah.
Yeah. He was much thinner and. Uh huh. Yeah, it was better that they did it the way they did. They were lucky enough to find the footage.
Yeah, I thought so too. So
that made it work.
And I think the reason that they did the separate episode with Wesley a couple. Episodes before is they knew they weren't going to be able to put him in the finale, but they still wanted to recognize him and his importance.
Yeah, kind of put a bow on his whole involvement in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would have been hard to have him in the past because, Will Wheaton had grown in a way that the rest of the cast hadn't. And then it would have been weird to have him from the future because it's like we just saw that he became this, super space and time traveler who – if he showed up 25 years in the future with the traveler powers, he might have been able to solve things immediately for Picard.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, what about Tasha? Oh, I was going to ask about Tasha. What did you think about Tasha coming back?
Yeah, I think she had to be there.
Yeah, totally.
And wow, I mean,
she was head of security on the Enterprise during Farpoint. She had to be there. They had to have her there.
Sure. And just like you were going, you know, Picard is taking you through this journey of nostalgia and whatnot. That scene with where he first encounters Tasha in the past.
Yeah.
That was pretty powerful, I thought.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you could tell he's completely rattled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back I guess it was the present, and he's like, Tasha, I was just speaking with Tasha.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, wow. I'm part of that too, is, you know, Patrick Stewart's amazing acting prowess, but I thought it was really powerful, especially for a character like Tasha, who we didn't get to see that much of compared to the other characters.
No, but the way he's able to communicate that kind of stifled grief and controlled joy at the same time, at being able to do what, you know, we all want to do, but we're not able to, which is see someone who's passed on.
Yeah.
I also like that scene where, you know, they swear him in, and then he goes to red alert, and everyone's just kind of stunned, and then Tasha yells out, "You heard him? Everybody move."
Yeah.
She's the only one who's still on her game.
I have to say, though, I mean, as much as I do like the past part of it for the nostalgia factor, Picard behaves so erratically in the past that I cannot believe that the crew didn't completely, like, mutiny either, you know, trying to relieve him
They almost did. At one point, Tasha...
But they don't do it, though, and it's like, if you had a commander you've never met before doing all these crazy things, I don't know. I think they would have been a little harder to convince than they were, but then again, it is a TV show.
It's also, he doesn't really have anybody to vouch for him. It's not right. It's not like he's got a first officer who they all trust, the first officer, and then so by extension they trust Picard. Or it's not as though, like, they ask Deanna, okay, well, you're an empath, can you tell, is he crazy? And she says, no, he's perfectly sane, he's very confident, he's very assured of what he's doing. They didn't add anything like that. Maybe they wanted to, right, and it was just pressed for time.
Yeah. I mean, that's a nitpick. I mean, it's a beautiful episode. But that was just one thing when I was rewatching it that kind of stood out to me.
Hmm.
It's like, he's kind of, from their perspective, he had to be completely unhinged in some instances.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, he could be acting on some top secret orders that he's not allowed to tell anyone about.
Sure.
Mm.
You know, he has to go investigate some anomaly, and he can't tell anyone why.
Yeah. Or some kind of, you know, intelligence operation of some kind.
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Okay, what about John DeLancey? What do we want to say about him?
Awesome just as ever. Awesome. Yeah, as cute. Yeah.
He's so good. And Warren Braga just gave him so many wonderful little bits to play during the episode. Like, even when he's playing that old man.
Oh, that's right. With the...
What?
With,
your with mummy?
The thing for his ear.
I don't know. Yeah, like, he got to ham it up quite a bit. I mean, he always hammed it up, DeLancey, but he really lays it on pretty good during this episode, and it's fantastic.
What do you think about when he uses the line, "It's time to put an end to your little trek through the stars"?
Trek, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think somebody said that Rick Berman wanted it in there.
Oh, really?
I think. I could be misremembering, but yeah, that was like a request. Like, either Rick Berman or Michael Piller, one of them was like, yeah, we gotta get that in there somewhere.
If anyone could get away with it, who could have, you know, who could come as close to breaking the fourth wall as you could get.
Right.
Star Trek, I think he's the one who's allowed to do that.
Cute.
Yep,
yeah.
Totally.
Now, the one thing that kind of bugged me in First Contact is Zefram Cochrane uses the same line. He says, like, you're all astronauts on some kind of Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it was funnier when Q said it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think nobody embiggened their role more on TNG than John DeLancey, in terms of, you know, the way he's originally written, he's very menacing. And DeLancey took him and said, no, I'm going to make him a little bit more of like a trickster god type figure, like Loki or something like that. And he does it in a way that's, you know, he's got his philosophical angle, but he's always having fun as the character went on. I mean, he's only menacing. I did a recount. And if you look at the Q episodes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, he appeared in 8 episodes, 2 of them are 2-parters, and only in 3 of them is he genuinely menacing. And in Deja Q, he's just kind of a victim, and then in the other 4 episodes, he's actually mostly kind of being helpful to the crew of the Enterprise. So I think he softened in a way that he was able to become more than just an antagonist.
Mm-hmm. And the whole premise of All Good Things is that Q is helping Picard to try and figure this out.
And there's almost like a little bit of tenderness in his voice when he says, "Well, I'm the one who got you in this." I saw John DeLancey at a convention in 1994, which was the perfect time to see him. And I remember he came out and there was a cardboard cutout of Patrick Stewart, and he came and he like kissed him on the cheeks, you know, the way a Frenchman might do, and then he kicked it over. Everybody loved it. They're cheering like nobody's business. And one of the fans there asked him, "Okay, well, now that you're done with this, what are you going to do to torture Kirk in Generations?" And he was he, the fan was very disappointed to learn that Q would not be returning for the movie. That, you know, he was kind of saying goodbye with All Good Things.
So I'd like to talk about, sorry, gear shift. I'd like to talk
Yeah.
about the future characters.
Sure.
So, what do we think about how realistic, their paths ended up being, or what would we expect them to actually be in 25 years compared to what they showed us that they would be in the
Oh, sure.
episode?
Okay, yeah.
My observations are that Data just Future Data basically just makes me laugh. He's living in Cambridge, as a professor of occupying the same
The
residence
Lucasian
as
chair.
the same residence as Sir Isaac Newton, who really was at
And
Cambridge.
Stephen Hawking, who'd appeared in the season finale of season six.
Yep, who's also
Right.
at Cambridge.
Yeah.
But he just has a ton of cats, and he's put that ridiculous gray streak in his hair, and he has this like assistant woman who's extremely English. I think one of my favorite exchanges with old Picard in the whole movie is because old Picard is
Oh.
sort of curmudgeonly,
Yeah, he
He
is.
is.
and when he's in Data's residence, and the woman comes out to bring them tea, she's like, "What do you want in your tea?" And he's like, "Tea, Earl Grey, hot." She's like, "Of
Of
course it's
course.
hot. Of course it's hot. What you want in it?" Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, They're trying to out curmudgeon each other.
totally. Yeah. So Data has
Man.
a bunch of cats. Picard is an old curmudgeonly guy on the sort of on the edge of sanity. Geordi is, I don't know, basically Geordi.
Just with a few
Worf.
extra pounds.
Yeah, pretty
Yeah, and
much.
he's retired. And Geordi's retired, isn't he?
Yeah,
Like,
he's
that's the
retired.
impression you get. Yeah, he's retired like Picard.
Yeah, and he's no, got no, no visor anymore, which is nice.
Right.
Who else? Riker is like an old dude and kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like a stick in the mud. Beverly is more commanding, I guess. You see that she's had more years of experience because she's in command of the medical ship.
Right.
Worf is awesome and is like turned into this true old Klingon warrior guy.
Yeah. And I actually think the future that they made with Worf, I felt like that dovetailed really well in what they ended up doing with him on Deep Space Nine, in terms of him returning to his people and being a bridge to between the Klingons and the Federation, but on the other side.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I felt that made sense for his character. One thing that really made me sad about the future incarnations of the characters is the fact that Beverly and Picard got together and then subsequently got divorced.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the shipping with Deanna and Worf and Beverly and Picard.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Well, let's start with Beverly and Picard since you introduced it.
All right.
Well, what did you like about knowing that they were together, and what made you sad about them getting divorced?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I would have preferred that they just like never got together rather than getting together and getting divorced, because they have,
Yeah.
so throughout the whole series there's this sort of sexual tension between them. And in this
Sure.
episode they specifically call it out, and they have a couple of scenes between Beverly and Picard that are quite intimate, and then one particular, I think they actually kiss in the episode
They do.
in modern time, quote unquote modern time.
Right.
And it's like, as a fan, especially one who's like you said, shipping this relationship between the two of them, it's like hell yeah, they finally did it. They're finally like gonna actually start getting together, and then you soon find out that they got divorced, which is like, what a crappy, and that they've kind of lost touch even. They don't even seem to really talk to each other much anymore, and it's just like that totally killed the all of the momentum that we got from seeing them kiss in the modern day timeline.
It throws a nice curve in there, though.
Yeah.
Because you don't expect that. You do not expect that.
It also indicates, you know, there's no such thing as a happily ever after, really. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people's lives continue, and good things happen and bad things happen. All good things come to an end, Kayla.
That's true.
Sorry. There was an episode in the seventh season, and Brian, I know you wanted to talk a little bit more broadly about this, not just as a series finale, but as a season finale to season seven. An episode called Attached, which really,
I like that episode.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's one of the best of season seven, where Beverly and Jean-Luc are trapped on the planet together, and the aliens put this, you know, piece of tech in their brain to read their minds, and instead the tech enables them to read each other's minds. They realize, oh, wait, maybe we really do have feelings for each other, and the feelings of guilt you have for my dead husband are not as important as us in the here and now. So right. I thought this led really well from that episode to draw a line from it. And you know, it's kind of inevitable to not be able to talk about this, but it really disappointed me that this didn't go anywhere in the movies. Because...
Well, yeah.
Oh, well, why do you think that might have been the case? That they didn't do anything with it?
I don't know. Why did they go through... begs the question of why did they go through the trouble of setting up Troy and Worf if they were going to drop it immediately when the movie came out? Like, I don't know why they did a bunch of those things. Why lay all this groundwork and then drop it?
So something...
I'm guessing it's because the general audience doesn't know these characters well enough and doesn't want to watch a relationship type of thing. I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know.
But then by the same token, in Insurrection... they, for some reason, brought back the Riker-Troy romance, which is something that I never, ever cared about. And then in Nemesis, they had him get married. And I remember watching both of those in the theater thinking, hang on a second, there's two much more interesting characters I want to see in a relationship that are just right over there. Instead of having them do stuff, you're making them shoot purple space bazookas for some reason. We'll save that for the Insurrection discussion.
I will say this quickly about Riker and Troy, though. Like, I never understood why they simply weren't together. Once it became clear that Riker was not going to be leaving the Enterprise and he wasn't really this career man that he really thought he was.
Yeah.
He was more interested in living, having a family. I don't know what stopped them from having a relationship much sooner than they did. They were clearly very close.
Yeah. They always called each other Imzadi.
Yeah. Like, I never quite understood what held them back. Like, I always thought that was an odd thing about the show, like that they let them be that close, but not too close.
Yeah, but I mean, that happens in real life sometimes, too.
Yeah, I guess.
Love makes you do the wacky.
I was always under the impression that the reason the relationship fell apart is because he was too driven in his career and couldn't think of anything but his career.
Sure, which was kind of fit with the whole idea of him being the Kirk, mini-me Kirk version of TNG.
Right. Anyway, I just thought a little sidetrack there. I just, you know. So it didn't really bother me terribly when they got together in the movies because I was like, well, finally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
14 years later.
Right. Right. Anyway.
Now, something that I remember, and she may have been joking, but I saw Marina Sirtis at a convention in the mid-90s, and they were asking about this. She said, well, you know, when I go to these conventions, I tend to say things that I shouldn't. And so... the way that the writers got revenge on me for spilling their secrets was to put me in a relationship with Worf. And that may have just been a joke, but it was a pretty good one. Thing is, like, again, knowing in Deep Space Nine that Worf would eventually end up with Jadzia, who seemed to fit him so much better, you see him, you know, on a date with Deanna, and it's like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
It comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it does.
Also, the person I always thought, and maybe this is just because I'm the nerd and so I self-identify with the character more, I always wanted to see Troy end up with Barclay because it's like the whole idea that she's... okay, yeah, no, laugh it up. It's appropriate. Because the whole idea that she's an empath means that she has another sense that can inform her romantic decisions than we do, right? And so maybe there's something about Barclay's mind that she found really interesting that someone is, you know... traditionally handsome as Riker wouldn't necessarily have, if that makes sense. Also, I wanted to say that just to nudge in, I kind of missed not seeing Barclay in the finale, and I think it would have been good to have him. And, you know, they could have...
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't have made sense to put him in the past because he didn't join the crew till the third season, whereas O'Brien was in the pilot. But I really would have liked to see Barclay.
Yeah.
Agreed.
He's such a
we
lovable
love
character.
Ridge.
He is.
Yeah.
And
it
you
was
know,
so great when he pops up out of nowhere in First Contact.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That is magnificent. That is the best. See, and you know, they talk about like, oh, we need, you know, and we were just discussing they need to make it more approachable to a mass audience. But here when he shows up and he's this engineer nerding out over meeting and being able to shake hands with the creator of Warp Drive, we all know who he is. We get the joke. So anyway, you're right. That was a fantastic scene. Now, okay, would it have been sensible to have put Guinan in the finale at any point?
Maybe, but then they would have... Maybe she, like Wesley, future Wesley, maybe she would have been able to give to... Either she would have given too much information to help
or not
solve
enough.
The problem, or not enough, and then it would be like, what was the point of that scene?
Yeah. Cryptic Guinan stuff where she says a lot but doesn't say anything.
Or she would have been like, oh, these timelines are, like, being... They're fluid and they're being changed because... You know, because it was a separate timeline. Remember, like Picard established in the present timeline. He's like, "Do you guys remember me calling Red Alert at the mission to Farpoint?" They're like, "No, we don't remember that." And he's like, "Okay, that means the things that I'm doing in the past aren't affecting this timeline." So maybe Guinan would have just been like, "I have no idea what's going on because they're outside of because she you know she has some kind of connection to time travel,
sure,
and knowing things like in the future and in the past, but but
and,
maybe she wouldn't
wisdom.
Have known." Yeah, maybe she wouldn't have known anything because these timelines were sort of outside of the actual universe that they're in. So,
you know, the episode where they established that the Yesterday's Enterprise, which you know, one of the best of the franchise, of course. I think that is it's simultaneously both the best and the worst thing that happened to the Guinan character because establishing that she has an extrasensory perception that can, you know, key into things like this. Makes you wonder at several other points through the rest of the show, like, well, wait, why don't they just go ask Guinan what's going on? Which, again, you know, and in this example specifically, particularly given that it's established that she's got a connection to Q, it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't feel that Guinan was missing. And knowing that they wanted someone who is a bankable movie star to be able to list as one of the actors in Generations, which is coming out a couple months later, I think they just saved her for that.
Right. Although she is uncredited in Generations.
Oh, I had forgotten that. Yeah,
she's not listed in the credits anywhere.
Interesting.
Yeah, small little aside.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Well, let's see. What else do we got? Before we move on from Beverly Picard, I thought it was really cute the scene on the Pasteur when the junior officer says, "Captain Picard," and they both go, "Yes."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Oh, I see you kept the name or whatever." Yeah,
that was very cute.
Okay,
there's a bunch of little moments like that throughout the whole thing.
Okay, here's a little moment that they tried to have that I thought, well, for me, fell short. I was like, "This doesn't make sense." There's a moment in the past where Picard goes to his ready room and orders tea Earl Grey hot from the replicator, and the replicator responds with something like, "You know, I'm sorry that dish is not in the replicator database." And I'm like, seriously? Like, they don't have Earl Grey tea in the replicator database before Picard came on the ship?
Yeah, it's like, I've got Earl Grey tea at my office, right?
Maybe in the future people don't drink that kind of tea anymore.
Yeah, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
And it's one of those anachronistic things that Picard's into.
That,
you know?
Yeah, like reading books instead
of... Yeah, right?
The main thing was just to show that he's out of his element.
I guess so. I just thought it was weird. I like didn't buy that they wouldn't that he had to actually program Earl Grey tea into the replicator.
That's one of those things where, it, particularly in, you know, 2016, knowing how advanced technology is now, we extrapolate how crazy advanced it'll be in the 21st century.
That's true.
But maybe at that point, I mean, remember
this was 22 years ago.
Yeah, when this aired, the CD was an amazing piece of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Crazy as that is to
That's
say.
True.
Okay, so there's one thing I wanted to say about Chief O'Brien. There's a bit where, you know, Picard drafts him to come help in engineering because, you know, of course, we know that he'll become the operations chief on Deep Space Nine. And O'Brien says, "Oh, this is really outside of my experience. I don't really know what I'm doing here." And Picard makes a callback to the episode Booby Trap where he says, "I know that you used to play with little model ships when you were a young man. I know that you're prepared for this." And it's this tender moment, and it's a callback to a nice episode. And he asks him, "Oh, how do you know that, Captain?" And he says, "Oh, I read it in your Starfleet file." That's always kind of rankled me a little bit for two reasons. One, it seems kind of weird that they'd have like that level of intimate details about
Yeah,
your childhood.
I agree.
So I'm not the only one who feels that way.
No, I thought it was weird too.
Okay, the other thing is I
Yeah, it's
wanted
like
him to
some kind
see.
of breach of HIPAA or something. Like they're reading
Some
his
kind.
like psychoanalysis report or something.
Yeah, it's like we've got access to everything
Yeah,
you've ever written in your journal,
but
and the
right.
captain
Yeah.
has read it. For
But
you,
Picard
a non-commissioned officer on a ship.
Picard's like, sorry about those recurring nightmares you've been having, man.
I know that you're going to have at some point compulsive depression because of having a really boring job, but it will be recorded for comedy on the internet in the form of a comic strip. Okay, the other thing that bugged me is instead of that, I wanted him to say, Captain Maxwell, Captain Benjamin Maxwell told me about it, calling back to the episode The Wounded, where we met Chief O'Brien's old captain. And I thought the idea of him being able to say, oh, yeah, I've got a relationship with your other captain that you're very loyal to, would have done a lot to instill him with some confidence. Because then there would have been that credibility of, like, you can trust me because Captain Maxwell trusts me and you liked him, so you like me as well. So I always thought that one little tweak would have been a little bit better.
Yeah, that would have been better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, nitpicking. This is a 10 out of 10 episode. We can only nitpick it. Now,
Yeah.
mention. If you were to rank the two-parters on TNG, like the top three, where would this be on that?
No, one.
Oh, you'd put it one. You'd put it above Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
Good for
Best
you.
of Both Worlds Part Two is kind of a disappointment after the setup of Part One.
Okay.
So I'll go with Kayla. Yeah, number one.
Wow. I would have put it as number two, but I admire you guys for pretty good at number one. That way to buck the trends. And then number three, I think after that would be the Chain of Command episode, the two-parter where
Yeah.
Picard gets captured. I think
Absolutely.
most people would put those three as the best one. They did.
But
I
what
would agree.
remind me of some more of the two-parters.
Oh, there's the one where okay, let's see if I can do them
Okay,
chronologically.
there's Time
Well,
Zero.
I mean Encounter at Farpoint first, then
Encounter
Best of
at
Both
Farpoint.
Worlds, then Redemption, the Klingon Civil War, then Unification with Spock, which,
Unification,
as
yep.
much as I love Spock, that episode really is disappointing. You watch it now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, then Time Zero,
Time
season
Zero, yeah.
finale of season five. Then season six, we had two-parters. We had Chain of Command, which is
Are
the
you
one with the
reciting this from
Cardassians.
memory, by the way? Because
I
that's
am.
really
I am.
impressive.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Nicely
you.
done.
I didn't date a lot in high school. And then. Again, Barclay. I wonder if Barclay would end up with Troi. And then the other one in the sixth season was, oh, it's this crappy
The
one where like
finale.
Worf goes to rescue. He thinks he's going to go rescue his father, and it's like he meets this hybrid Klingon Romulan colony.
Oh,
I think it's
yeah.
called Rightful. No, Birthright. I think is the name of the two-parter. That one was not
Right.
particularly good. Although they do some cool stuff with Data dreaming in part one, which was great. But then they don't revisit in part two.
Oh, the one
Then
with
this.
the blackbird that's flying around the Enterprise and his
Exactly.
page.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked those things were kind of cool.
Yes. But that was not the main focus of the
I didn't
episode.
realize that was the same episode
It's
as
the same
Worf
episode.
finding that hybrid
Yeah.
colony. Wow, they
It's
seem
really
like they're like
weird.
two different episodes in my mind.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And I wish they just made the Klingon one a one-parter and the Data's dream things a one-parter, because the
Yeah.
Klingon Romulan thing wasn't interesting enough to expand out to two, but then the
Yeah, I
Data's
agree.
dream thing was too interesting to just leave as a subplot. Anyway, but that's another story. And then Descent, the final Borg episode with Lore, and then Gambit, which was the space pirates, and then All Good Things.
I would have to
There we
put
go.
Time's Arrow in the top somewhere in the top of those. I really
Okay.
like Time Zero Part 1 and 2.
Yeah.
It is quite goofy, but that's one of the things I love about it.
One of the things I love about that is the TNG crew never went to the 20th century. They go to the 19th century and the 21st century, but for as much as the TOS crew was always going to the 20th century, they never did that. So I liked that. And also, I did a semester-long project on Mark Twain when I was in fifth grade, and so I've always loved Mark Twain.
Nice.
That's cool.
I don't know what would about some of those other two parties. Do you think, Brian, are there's any of those that you think or in the same league as All Good Things.
No, not really. Well, like I said, All Good Things, Best of Both Worlds, and Chains of Command to me are like my three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
Three epic, epic episodes of Star Trek. I don't feel after they those it's those three, and then the others are kind of occupy a lesser category in my mind.
I really did like Gambit, though, which, again, you know, if we want to talk a little bit more about the rest of season seven, we could do it now. I did really like the Gambit two-parter. I thought that did a lot to show the friendship of Picard and Riker, particularly when they're outside of a traditional command structure. And I liked the conflict back on the Enterprise with Worf being a little bit genuinely insubordinate toward Data when, you know, Data doesn't take his more aggressive advice. I thought that episode was really good. And it's also, that's one of those episodes where they say with the space pirates, that was something that Gene had never wanted to do, and it was an episode that they could only do in the seventh season because they wouldn't have been able to get away with it in earlier seasons.
I thought it was a fun little two-parter, but, like, I don't know. It didn't really – I can't say that it really did much for me, to be honest.
It's I don't think there's any larger meanings or, like, great emotional moments in it, but it is just fun.
Agreed.
And it's okay for something to be just fun.
No, I agree. That was when I was rewatching the seventh season, I don't know, last year sometime, when they go to look for Picard, the crew, everybody, the entire command crew, goes to that station to look for him. I'm like, who the hell is running the Enterprise?
Yeah, Barclay.
It's like, damn, they took everybody. It's like it was at the point in the series, I guess, where they're like, oh well, everybody wants, you know, scenes.
So everyone needs more screen time, scenes. Yeah,
I guess so. That's one thing that stood out to me when I was watching that episode. I'm like, who the hell is running the Enterprise right now?
See, and that's the problem when you say our ship has 1,014 people on it. It's like, okay, then you would probably have like a dedicated, you know, part of the security team. That this is their job to go down there. The only person who'd go with them was Worf and maybe Deanna because of her empathy would be advantageous. But you certainly wouldn't send the whole senior staff.
Yeah, we could have a whole separate argument about all the logic issues that are entailed when you're dealing with a ship that big and why we only see maybe, you know, the same 10 to 15 people on a ship of over 1,000.
Yeah, a 1% of the crew.
Yeah, I mean, when they have department head meetings, it's always the same 6 or 7 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as you if, I mean? Like, well, yeah. But then, so is the 1,014 including the families?
Yes, I believe that includes the families.
So to be fair, what are the families, half of the ship?
Yeah.
The
whole family idea is a little crazy to me too, but like I said, this is a whole separate argument.
Yeah. That's a discussion for another podcast.
There's also the issue with that is sort of the way you can look at TNG to psychoanalyze Gene Roddenberry at the end of his life.
Because someone's PhD thesis right there.
Oh yeah, holy cow! I should do that another 6 years. I don't need to make any more money.
What is your thesis about Gene?
Oh, well, one of the things that he said when they asked him to do TNG is he said, well, for 3 years on the original series, I had to be away from my family. You can't pay me enough money to do that again. And so the idea of having his the crew having families on the ship was the way he also wanted to have his family with him on the show.
Hmm.
It's
an interesting view.
Is my thought.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sounds valid to me.
Yeah, makes sense. Oh, the seventh season. Is there anything else, Brian, you wanted to say broader about how this episode fits into the last season of the crew?
Yeah. So I just want to go wind back the clock a little bit. When the show was announced that it was going to end after the seventh season, I think it was during season 5 they announced at the end that the seventh season would be the end. And I remember being, you know, obviously very upset about it. Jared, I don't know if you remember, you know, the announcement and the reaction to it.
Oh, yeah. No, I was disappointed.
We were all very disappointed and like, why? Because especially during like season 5, the show is on fire.
Yeah.
Creatively.
Season 6 is even better than season 5.
Yeah, but the point being, the show was in like an upward ascension. Like it was still like putting out tremendous TV week after week after week. And I remember being, you know, disappointed and whatnot. And why would they do this? Why would they do this? Obviously, they're going to make feature films, but they're killing the show before it's, you know, before it's time, whatever. And then the seventh season comes on, and about halfway through the year, I have to tell you, I was like, you know what? It's probably a good thing the show's ending.
Yeah.
I found the seventh season, to me, All Good Things redeems that season. Because to me, that's almost as bad as the second season if you pull out All Good Things.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I just don't, there's a lot of junk in season seven.
Is there any one episode from season seven that stands out particularly as junk to you? And I already have a couple on my mind, but I want to hear what you think.
That one with Beverly where like, she's having sex with a ghost.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's,
I mean,
right.
Even Gates McFadden is like, what the hell was that all about?
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, you know, they're trying to do like a, you know, Bronte sisters gothic horror type of thing there.
Oh, it had a Harlequin romance thing all over it.
Yeah, and the weird thing is they kind of did that with Janeway on Voyager, too, with some, like, hollow novel she would do, where she was, like, a governess. And so there must have just been somebody on behind the scenes who really liked that kind of story.
Right.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought that the season was very uneven. Very uneven.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good stuff in there. Don't get me wrong. The Pegasus is really
good.
Oh,
I forgot about the Pegasus.
Attached, like we were discussing
Attached
earlier,
is really
was great. There's good stuff in it, but, like, it just felt like the show needed, was winding down. And, like, it was probably a good thing that it got off before it really ran out of gas.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I think, you know, the creative staff just kept getting pulled off, right? I mean, you can see halfway through season six, half the creative goes over to Deep Space Nine, and then toward the end of season seven, people are worried about getting Voyager up and off the ground. So,
but who really? I mean, Michael Piller left, which was obviously had a huge effect on the seventh season. But like the writing staff, I think was still left intact. Maureen Braga stayed.
Ira Stephen Bear went over to Deep Space Nine.
Okay, he did. Yeah, but he wasn't on TNG at that point.
Wasn't
he wasn't on the writing staff.
Oh, I didn't realize that. And then Jerry Taylor, I think Jerry Taylor checked out because she was so invested.
Jerry Taylor took over Voyager.
Sub Rosa,
no.
This episode.
Oh, she did?
Yeah,
oh,
I'm looking at it right now on the Wikipedia. And by the way, I want you to imagine I'm Jerry Taylor and I'm pitching this story to you. And I'm just going to read verbatim the one-sentence explanation of the episode from Wikipedia.
Sure.
Okay. Dr. Crusher attends her grandmother's funeral and spends time in her grandmother's haunted house, romanced by her grandmother's non-corporeal lover. It's like, what?
Known otherwise as a ghost.
Also, what?
Yeah.
She's romanced by her grandmother's non-corporeal lover?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Well,
space ghost.
Space ghost. Coast to coast.
Yeah. So, but like, yeah, but she took over she ran the writer's room during the seventh year, Jerry Taylor. She stayed with the show.
She's also listed as one of the creators of Voyager, though, and I think even if she's still running the show, I think her mind was elsewhere. She was thinking like, how do I make Captain Janeway work? How do I sell this to the producers? How do I sell this to the audience? How do we find the right actress for her? Because she didn't want it to be screwed up.
Right. Anyway, like I said, I just felt that the finale really did salvage what I thought was a very shaky final.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed. I'm trying to think of some other episodes. Okay. There's that one where Data is Frankenstein episode. I believe it's called Thine Own Self, where he's like on a planet and he's radioactive, and you know he kind of the townspeople like turn on him.
Right.
What did you think of that episode?
Yeah, it was okay. I don't know. It didn't really reach out to me.
See, the thing, that's another one of those episodes where the A story is you know, so. But the B story, that's the one where Troy is taking these, like, she's trying to get promoted to commander or get whatever field commission she needs to. And so Riker is running her through all these simulations on the holodeck, and she keeps, you know, failing, and she's really discouraged. And then she realizes it's not a question of skill. It's she just needs to show that if, you know, in a difficult situation, she's willing to send one of her subordinates to their death. Right. And so it's like a cool twist on the Kobayashi Maru type of thing. And once she realizes that, then she gets the promotion. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a great storyline and showed some of the realities of command that they don't necessarily talk about on Star Trek as much.
That's true.
So I really liked that part. But the Data's Frankenstein stuff was weird.
It didn't really do anything for me. It wasn't terrible. It just didn't. It was just a kind of
a filler.
Generic filler. Kind of filler episode. Yeah, and I felt like there was a lot of that during that season.
Yeah,
that's all.
One episode I remember really not liking was the one where, like, Data gets possessed by, like, the spirits of some ancient civilization. And
oh, masks? Oh,
masks.
Yeah, like some... Oh, yeah, the whole Mexican Mayan like, thing.
Thing. Everyone hates masks. You know, I don't hate it that much. I always kind of dug it because it was different.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah.
It's very different.
It's super weird. I'll give you that. But it's just really different from the typical, you know, cookie cutter Next Generation episode. And I guess that's what I liked about it.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is a good point. And there, yeah.
Felt, to me, it just felt like it was more of a Doctor Who story than a Star Trek story. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's because I've been watching too much Doctor Who in the 90s, but...
It is goofy and weird to the extent that Doctor Who is more goofy and weird than TNG.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is pretty goofy and weird, but that jives with me, I guess.
Hey, we'll take it. And... Thing is, the right amount of goofy and weird is what you need to stay normal, I guess, right? Otherwise, it becomes
it's too
bland,
serious.
Then it becomes bad, right?
But you know, I'm not gonna be the first person. I'm not gonna jump to defend the episode. You know, I know, like I said, I know a lot of people hate it, and it's not like I love the episode and want to defend it, but I just don't have a problem with it. I guess I enjoyed watching it.
Oh, good.
Oh. Fair enough.
Yeah. Anything else about season 7?
No.
Righty.
I don't think so.
Not that we can cover in the next few minutes.
The next couple of minutes we have. The other things I just wanted to touch on, I really liked that they brought back the cosmic cheerleader outfit from Farpoint. They didn't flinch from that at all. I'm sure if Marina Sirtis had put her foot down, they could have found something else for her, but they just owned it. And then... It didn't really register with me. We're watching it again. In the first season, Worf had a gold sash, and then when they changed him out of the red costume, they put him into the you know, kind of the mustard green, and I guess the silver looked better than the gold on the gold, kind of. And I realized, oh, wait, he's got a gold sash because all the Klingons in TOS had gold sashes.
Yeah, totally.
It's just the same
it even looks more like a TOS sash.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it really does. Good point.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
I hadn't. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm not the only one then.
One funny thing that I noticed right at the very beginning of the episode is I noticed where a particular internet meme comes from this episode from All Good Things.
Oh, which one?
And it's a meme of Picard, kind of looking sort of sassy, maybe. And he's like holding his hands up to his mouth, almost like, oh my god. And the text says, bitch, please, those shoes with that top. And he totally is like, oh girl. And he even has his like his 24th century captain's jammies going with the like the low cut v-neck and the nice gray silver chest hairs sticking out, you know, showing his manly 24th century Captain Picard chest. And it's a scene at the beginning where he's chatting with, I don't remember, someone from the Federation on his little laptop in his quarters. And that's when they're telling him, oh, you have to go investigate this anomaly that just popped up in the neutral zone at the very beginning of the movie. And for some reason, he's just like rubbing his lips.
Interesting. Huh.
And the freeze frame
looks
very much like a bitch,
now I'm gonna have to go back and look.
Moment. Yeah, I will put the meme in the article along with the podcast so you can see what I'm talking
cool.
about.
Cool. Absolutely.
Now, Kayla, you wanted to talk a little bit about The Journey's End, which is the documentary kind of that they did at the end of TNG.
Yeah, so something that really goes along with All Good Things is this documentary, like I said, it's called Journey's End, not to be confused with the episode of The Next Generation called Journey's End. Mm. But it's called Journey's End, the Saga of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I'll throw a link to the whole thing, which is on YouTube. You can also find it on Netflix. If you go to season 7 of The Next Generation on Netflix, it is at the very end, right after All Good Things. So it'll even just autoplay right after All Good Things, which is how I ended up watching it, at least the beginning of it, last week. And it's just a really great look back at the entire series. And it's hosted by Jonathan Frakes. And there's a lot of behind the scenes footage and, you know, footage of them shooting stuff. And then there's a lot of, there's, it cuts away to interviews, and there's a ton of great material from Rick Berman in particular. He's got some of the best lines, I think, in the documentary. Like,
oh, like
he
what?
he just calls shit out, like the funny stuff that we always would laugh and make fun of. He refers to early Deanna Troi. He says that she looks like, quote, some sort of intergalactic cheerleader. And it's like he's just calling out all of this stuff that, you know, we as fans were totally aware of and would make fun of. Like, they were totally aware of all of these things as yeah. well. And so, that, you know, it's these things that they learned from early in the series that they grew and changed in the middle and towards the end of the series. And you know, right. they actually talk about this. They say, yeah, we had Deanna Troi looking like an intergalactic cheerleader. We fixed that later. So little cool tidbits like that peppered throughout the interviews. It's definitely worth watching if you haven't seen it, or even if you have, it's worth a rewatch.
It is. It also...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian. I've been talking too much.
No, I just wanted to say that I think that documentary is also on the Blu-ray set for those of you who have the Blu-ray set.
Oh, great.
That's all.
Something that I really like on that is... You know, Jonathan Frakes hosts it, and they show a bit of him going to a convention, and he just crashes it, and he, you know, it's kind of fun. He shows up in the middle of someone else's performance, and say he yells, "I wasn't invited, but I came anyway," and of course the crowd just goes wild, which I don't know if you could get away with that kind of thing at a convention that they function now. Maybe they're a little too regulated. And then there's a scene of him signing a picture for a little girl who's dressed up like as a Bajoran or something. And he says, "Well, how do you want to make this out to?" And he says, "To your biggest fan, love, William Shatner." And he said, you know, he plays along with it completely. And it's just a funny little moment.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
That is cute.
I was just thinking that before we finish our discussion of the next generation and of All Good Things, I wanted to talk about what I think is just the best moment of the whole episode and
yeah.
maybe just
yeah.
the whole
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is the moment at the end
yeah.
of All Good Things where Picard is talking to Q after everything is wrapped up. And he basically, Q explains to him why they, you know, why the quote unquote court has decided in favor of humanity. And basically, in my mind, sums up what Star Trek is about.
The unknown possibilities of existence and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So when Q says, "For one fraction of a second, you're open to options you'd never considered." And then he talks about what exploration means in the context of Star Trek, which isn't necessary. He says it's not mapping stars and studying nebula, but charting the unknown possibilities of existence. And then, you know, Picard has this goofy, "Q, what are you trying to tell me?" It's like, duh, Picard.
Well, and then the cutest thing Q does on his way out is he paraphrases what Picard said at the end of Encounter at Farpoint. At Farpoint, he says, "Let's see what's out there." That's the last line of that episode. And Q's farewell to him as he says, "I'll see you out there."
Yeah, see you
out there. Yeah. So it's just
if you're lucky, I might stop in from time.
Brian,
that's right.
Would we be lucky enough to have Q stop in from time to time with the TNG crew? No, we were not. No, we weren't.
No, unfortunately yeah. not. I would have loved to have seen Delancey in one
Wouldn't
of the
that
movies.
Been great?
Yeah, it really would have.
Okay, so we like to close with a Trek anecdote, as you know. Actually, while we've been recording this, I just saw some news that happened today. It's a little sad. I think it'd be important for us to recognize this. Again, we're recording this on May 9th, 2016. And apparently William Shalhart, who best known to TV as the dad on the Patty Duke show, and who was also later president of the Screen Actors Guild, but best known to Star Trek fans as Nils Barris from The Trouble with Tribbles, He passed away today. He was 93, so he lived a good long life. Of course, Nils Barris, Brian, if people don't remember that off the top of their tongue, who was Nils Barris?
Nils Barris was a bureaucrat that Kirk dealt with on Space Station K7, The Trouble with Tribbles. He was the gentleman who was trying to protect the Quadro Triticale.
Did Captain Kirk take the mission of protecting the Quadro Triticale too lightly?
On the contrary, he took the mission very seriously. It was Barris he took lightly.
I love that line. That's just so great. Kirk just being Kirk in that episode.
Kirk has a lot of great lines in that episode.
And I just love the way he's like, you know, he's so rude to Nils Barris, and then he's got this wonderful fake politeness toward Koloth the whole time. It's just delightful to see the way I'm like bounced back and forth between those two.
Yeah, Shallert and Shatner worked really well together in that
magnificently.
In that
yeah, so
They really did.
I was not aware, Mr. Barris, that 12 Klingons constitutes a swarm.
Yeah, so
he is like a stereotypical bureaucrat, mm-hmm. and he was just obnoxious. Oh, he was awful.
Yeah, yeah, but
William Shallert is a legend in the business. It's sad to see him go, but you know what? 93 is a hell of a number.
Yeah, good for him. Maybe I'll be so lucky. Sorry, I never got to see him at a convention. And it makes me...
No, me neither.
There's some of these, you know, you go to conventions and there's like these, you know, guys who guest starred in one episode of TOS and you think, oh, that's not as interesting as, you know, still Scott Bakula or whatever. And it's like, I think we need to start paying a little more attention to some of those guys because pretty soon they're all going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, the TOS. Yeah, we're running out of TOS people very rapidly. Are.
Except for Ron Howard's brother. I think he's still got a few more years left in him. He played the kid in Corbin Might Maneuver. Anyway.
Yeah, the Tranya.
Yep. Yep.
That was a brilliant piece of casting.
Oh, absolutely.
Having a little kid play this incredibly powerful alien.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and they would have thought that maybe there'd be a little kid there if they were capable of opening their mind to the untold possibilities of existence.
For one brief moment.
But it would take them a few years to get there. Anyway, our condolences to the Shallert family and anyone who he's close to. And we're just so grateful for him for being a part of absolutely one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever.
Yes, thank you.
No problem. And I think that will do it for us. And I hope it's not inappropriate for me to say we will see you out there.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Come in. Is there a problem, sir?
No. I just thought that I might join you this evening, if there's room.
Of course. Have a seat.
Would you care to deal, sir?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Data.
Actually, I used to be quite a card player in my youth, you know. A long time ago.
You were always welcome.
So, 5-card stud, nothing wild, and the sky's the limit.